Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah, I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. Your entry level, baby. Your entry level. Ooh, yeah. Entry
level. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney. Win money to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I got him. We're outside. He's moving. Nick Turner.
Yo, we recorded inside a little bit.
It was echoey.
But apparently when you have no furniture in your house, it's not great for sound.
He's moving up, moving over. Got a new place. It's great. Nick, how's the move going?
It's going great for Lyra, who is not here. But for me, it's quite a lot of work. Lyra, nothing. Me, all of it. What's great is that I've not really experienced this much, but I have to do a walkthrough with the landlord tomorrow. Okay. Which, I mean, it's fine. There is a giant hole in the closet where I've been podcasting from, which it's the closet of my bedroom, which is slightly, I would say, 1 inch wider than the chair I use in there. Which is a rolly chair. And so I've just been rubbing a hole in the wall for the past 14 months. And now I have to atone for this. So I watched some YouTube tutorials about how to fill in a hole. I did a bad job. I should have showed you. It's in there. It's not good.
Oh my God.
But it's like this fast drying putty that I put in yesterday and is not dried yet.
You got soup in a hole?
It's not soup. It's fine. It will.
So your landlord's gonna come over. You're like, there was a hole there. Now it's a mess. It's a hole with a mess in it.
It just looks like I've been putting my gum there for the whole year. But I eat the same kind of gum. It's just no, because it's pink and it dries white.
It's still pink.
Yeah. Well, I put.
It doesn't sound like.
I got these like metal plates put over it, but they didn't quite. They weren't wide enough.
And you were. This is also, listeners, you were looking at your new place about how to find a door and put a door on an opening.
Yeah.
And you can't.
No.
You're having trouble with the hole, but you think you can do it.
No. Door is just measuring.
What is a hole?
A hole filling with gunk.
Okay.
There's no gunk involved with a door. It's a human experience.
I don't have faith in the door is what I'm saying. Your whole situation is not giving me a lot to believe in.
The door's going to be tough.
Yes.
But I was encouraged to, I was complaining, or I was just telling Will and Julia about it yesterday, and Will was like, you got to call Jim Van Blarick. He'll come over and just fix it for you.
Yeah.
The guy who helped me move.
Right.
And it was also like, there's like all these projects in my new house I want to ask him to do. I was like, I can't ask him to come do this hole. So I did it. I will see. It's just not dry.
I'm going to take a photo of it. I'll put a photo of this whole, the situation up on the Instagram. Go check it out. Entry Level Brooks Mayland on Instagram. That's incredible. I'm back from Hawaii. I had a great time. I don't know if you know this, but the fish there, the poke, quite good.
Yes.
Very delicious.
That's not a fish.
Poke?
That's
a style of
that's preparing. A meal, right? But,
no, they have poke. It's like cut up. It's cut up. You get a poke bowl that comes with rice, but you get like.
But what kind of fish?
Like ahi poke is what it's called, like or salmon poke. It's like a way you prepare it.
Sure.
It's not a fish. I'm saying the fish in general is delicious.
Hell yeah, dude.
We went to.
You know what the state fish is?
Sea bass.
No, the humu humu nuku nuku apua'a.
That's racism right there. I'm going to cut that out for you.
What?
Yeah.
That's the fish.
Okay. Did you get it right?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Look it up.
I believe you, but the fact that you would know it that well is mind-blowing.
What? I spent a lot of time there.
I forget.
Yeah.
I forget that
Not many years, but okay. In my 20s, I was there quite frequently.
like a native. Okay, so Summer and I go boogie board, and there's this place in Poipu. It's like best spot to boogie board, and we go there. It's incredible. It's like a big wave pool, you know, like perfect waves coming into boogie, and it is just
boogie waves.
It's incredible. It's so fun. I'm out there. I'm boogieing with a bunch of like 10-year-olds. We're fucking.
You know what I call boogie waves? The bedroom.
Nice. All right. Okay. Back to my story.
I'm quite overweight.
Oh. Anyway, Summer's like, I go back to the beach, back in where Summer's chilling. I was like, you got to grab your boogie. You got to come out. You got a boogie. She goes, it looks crowded. And I'm like, no, it's just like, you know how you see a photo of the beach from an angle, it looks packed. There's a lot of space out there. She's like, oh, okay. So she comes out. She's like waiting for a wave. A wave crashes. I go under it. A little kid is barreling at my girlfriend. Like, so he's coming in hard, right? And I'm like,
little kid, what are we talking?
Probably 10.
18, 10.
Yeah. Okay. And so I jump out of the way. Then I'm like, I bet that they missed. Both their boogies come up. Neither one of them, and their boogies are like super wrapped up in each other. Their holes.
No sign of your love.
No sign of the 10-year-old or girlfriend. And then 10-year-old pops up. Yeah. And then girlfriend pops up. She's like, oh my God, this kid had kneed her in the fucking face. And then I go, are you okay? And the 10-year-old's like, I'm fine. I'm not fucking you.
Yeah, he's used to people caring about him.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was just, I felt very responsible. Because she's like, is it packed? I'm like, no, it's not packed. It's sold. And then immediately smoked in the face by a little kid. Ruined her boogie. She didn't boogie board anymore.
Retaliate?
She attacked him.
Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, weapon?
She's still in Hawaii.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she can't believe him. I was like, I got to go pod.
You can't let that go.
It was very fun.
Whatever you got to do.
That was a treat. I'm a boogie king. I don't fuck with surfing. I boogie. I caught some of the best boogie waves in my life.
Well, surfing's a lot harder.
No, for me. I choose to boogie.
I got perfect at surfing, and then I don't enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't like how cool I look. I want to be on my tummy. Also, here's a note. If you go to Hawaii, if you go to Kauai, I recommend hiking the Kaloma Trail. It's the Nepali coast. Very fun, very cool. But here's what I didn't know. You need reservations to go.
Yeah.
So we're walking up, and the guy's like, you need reservations? I'm like, come on. Like, what do I got to do? And he's like, you can't. But here's the thing, listeners, heads up, you just hike around them. It's a fucking state park. We followed a river down to the beach and then went around these guys. You can hike the Nepali coast. If you can get reservations, get them. But if you don't worry. Still hike it. Just go around them.
Okay. I can't believe you're still going with this.
People are upset I talked about it.
Yeah. Why would you say this again?
Because I mean it.
All right. Tell them people what people said to you on
people
Twitter.
People on Twitter.
Quite a few.
quite a few well-spoken people.
These weren't people with like American flag avatars.
No, these were normal. These were people who listen to the podcast.
Yeah, these are people who were like just had like a Hawaii background in there.
And I'm like, here's how you sneak around and get to the state park to get to the Nepali coast. And I showed a map and a drawing, and people were like, hey. Guy I don't know. There's a reason it's reservations, because it's over trafficked and it's eroding the coast, and so you need to make reservations. Could you please take this down? I doubled down. I said no.
Matt Gaetz.
I Matt Gaetzed it.
It's quite popular.
But here's my thought process. It's not easy to sneak into this fucking state park. You have to crawl down a jungle stream without being seen through the jungle to go to the beach. If you're gonna do that, you deserve to hike the coast.
Why is it that you're not allowed? Like, what does the human traffic do?
Well, it's just like,
is there certain like bad actors, or is it just walking the trail erodes?
I hiked it once 5 years ago. It was packed. It was fucking packed.
Oh, yeah.
I saw two people get airlifted out of there in helicopters.
Uh-huh.
This hike, I saw maybe like 15 people the whole time. So I think they're just like, it's too crowded. Too many people are doing this fucking trail.
What were they airlifted out for?
One guy fell and hit his head. The other lady got too tired. It's an intense hike. This lady was 1 mile away from. It's like you go up and down.
Okay. Now I'm for the ban, because now it's like only people that are going. They're like hiking people.
Yes,
they're like
you
they're
have
going
to
on
know.
Vacation a month away, and you know, like I'm gonna go on some hikes.
Yes,
let's do some hike research.
Exactly.
So the people who were probably airlifted out were probably like, what are we doing today?
Exactly.
Oh, was, I don't know. There's a hike. I'm like, it's fun.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The lady was laying on the ground and she was like, call a helicopter, because she'd seen somebody else get airlifted.
All right. You know what? I give you a pass.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But if you sneak around, because I'll tell you what that lady's not doing. She's not crawling down a jungle stream. It's keeping the riffraff out.
Yeah. But if you're mad at Brooks right now, you're not wrong. There's
you're not wrong.
Something to be mad at him
yeah.
about. Also, I had an invention idea.
Hold on. I got to finish the lady who got airlifted.
Oh, okay.
So, and then we'll get to this invention.
Sure.
So she's a mile from the exit. And they're like, excuse me, ma'am, you have one more mile to go. She's like, I can't care. I can't go anymore. Call the helicopter. Call the helicopter. I'm like, oh, my God. And they're like, ma'am, come on. She's like, I can't
One mile.
It. 1 mile. And it's an intense mile. So then the helicopter.
Just take a nap.
Then the helicopter.
Take a nap in the leaves.
Dude, exactly. The helicopter comes. It comes, right?
Helicopter. It's like. $20,000.
Okay, here's the funniest part. In her head, she's probably like, I'll just climb into the helicopter to leave. That's not what happens. They lower a gurney on a rope. Then they strap her into a gurney, and then they flies away where she's in the dangling from below the helicopter.
Oh, my God.
She doesn't realize that's what's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
So they start lowering the gurney.
I'll walk.
Yeah. She literally goes, okay, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. And they're like,
God.
Lady, it's here.
Lady,
you said call the helicopter.
Lady.
It's fucking here.
You're paying for
We're
it.
Strapping you into this thing, and literally this woman's screaming, and they're just like, and gets dragged
That's
off
incredible.
The coast. It
Where's
was
that
the
video?
Most amazing thing I'd ever seen.
Where's that video?
I don't know, man. I was too busy being like, I was like in shock that it
man,
all was all.
You just were having like a human experience.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Oh, it was incredible.
Oh,
okay,
that's so good. Did you see that video of like that 70-year-old woman who was spinning like super fast under a helicopter? Just like spinning like faster, like a fan fast, like hard to see where her head was.
What?
It was just going so fast. It was just minutes of this.
Oh,
there's a video. That's on YouTube. I don't know. Go look that up.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Okay, go on.
So here's my my invention.
Okay.
Because you want to look cool, be a cool surfboarder, but you know you're a boogie boarder.
But I'm a professional surfer. But I'd rather boogie.
So you know how there's like
more challenging.
There's like bikes that fold up, you know, so you carry them. Well, I want the opposite for you.
Okay.
I want a surf like a boogie board that folds out.
Okay, so I walk.
So when you walk around, it looks like a surfboard,
yes.
But then you fold it down to boogie.
Yeah,
board.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's a great invention.
Yeah.
So the boogie surf.
And it's really light.
The boogie surf.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Something to put on your car just that you can complete the look.
You want to make it harder to boogie.
Yeah. You just want like one thing where you can't just fit anywhere.
Yep. That sounds great.
Great.
This is awesome. Okay. So we got the surf boogie. We did all the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Come see me and Nick. We're performing in Austin, Texas.
You're the week after me now?
Yeah, because... I guess Shane Gillis is recording a special, and I love Rebecca, who runs the creek.
Yeah, for sure. What do you
care?
She
asked if I could switch. I said 100%.
Yeah.
So now I'm the week after you.
And you got that that SNL stink connection.
Jesus Christ. I have no connection with that guy.
Oh, but also I did want to say real quick. Yeah, Lyra is traveling for 2 days with her family, and they get in screaming fights.
Okay, wait. You told me to wait because you were going to tell me this. So I
said,
what's up with Lyra traveling with her family?
Yeah. So, Lyra flew to Asheville,
and then
they're driving up to New York, and I'm going to meet him in the Adirondacks.
Nick goes, you know, have I talked about how Lyra's dad doesn't believe GPS? And I go, what? You go, wait, start the podcast.
Yeah. So I've experienced this. I've been in the car with him where I'm thinking he's joking, you know, but he does not trust it. Like he thinks that they've found, they don't know. Like the computers don't know what he knows. So they are on a 2 day trip. That's like 16 hours, you know. Also Virginia, where they stopped was at halfway, almost.
Okay.
So he contends that his way is 3 hours faster. In an eight-hour trip.
Oh, my God.
3 hours. And Lyra said that she yelled at him for like an hour. I don't know, man. So then I was like, why doesn't he Google our Google Maps faster? So I Googled it. And you know what? They're not.
No.
They're the greenest way. Like where you save you like use the least gas or something.
Oh, that's what Google Maps shows
you? Yeah.
So wait, is his way faster?
No.
Okay.
No. He's still a crazy old man who broke his laptop right before the trip and demanded that he had to bring his desktop computer to the lake. Incredible. So he could do some work. Yeah.
So incredible. How much faster was his way?
It's so much shorter. I don't know, but you can't tell because right. You can't like put your own route in mm-hmm. Google Maps.
Okay. One time in college, we were going to visit my friend who lived in Chicago, and I might have said this story before, but my roommate Steve, we're going from Iowa to Chicago. We're like pulling up to Chicago. I had Steve do directions. You know, uh-huh. This is pre-phones, maps on phones at least. Yeah. I was like, Steve, what was it? TripAdvisor? Not TripAdvisor, but
MapQuest.
He MapQuested it.
Yeah.
So I was like, Steve, pull out the map. Pull out the MapQuest. You MapQuested how to get there, right? He's like, yeah. So he's telling me, he's giving me directions, and I'm like, wait, where are we? Where did you type in? Because Pat lives in the South Side. He goes, Chicago. So he just he goes Iowa to Chicago straight up.
Mm-hmm.
It was just directing me to the fucking Millennium Park in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Like, this Pat lives a half hour from
me. I understand putting in Chicago at the start of your trip. But then once you hit the city, you're like, all right, where are we going?
That's what happened. And he just kept directing me until I was like, what the fuck are you just going to pull over and call?
Also, Lyra can't read a map. Don't tell anybody this. Okay. Nobody contact Lyra.
All right. So we got great listener mail. That's fun. He doesn't trust GPS. I understand. It turns out he's not wrong. We've got two good listener mails. One of them is a conspiracy theory, which I love. Very into this. It's very quick. He goes, okay, so this is from Eric. So here's one that I found interesting. When Saddam got caught, already.
Oh, this is from the Osama thing. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
So, yeah, Osama bin Laden was killed a long time ago.
Yeah.
When Saddam got caught and taken out of his spider hole, I like
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
The date trees behind him had fruits on them. But those trees didn't fruit during that time of the year that he was, quote unquote, caught.
Mm-hmm.
So the conspiracy theory is that he was caught months before he was. I don't think that's a conspiracy theory. I think that's probably what happened.
Oh.
He's just saying, they were like, we caught Saddam, and it looks like and the fruits had fruited early. So they're like, we had caught him earlier. I was like, it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that, but I 100% believe it.
Yeah. So the government lied. I get that. I like that. Oh, you know what I watched? You know what documentary I watched? Is Night Stalker.
Okay.
Have you seen
that? I watched that, yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
This guy was murdering all
Save for those teeth, he would have been a looker.
He was so hot.
Yeah.
Richard Ramirez looked good.
It's like Cameron Diaz, where it's like sometimes she's the hottest woman on the planet. Another time, she's just like a normal lady.
So you're saying Richard Ramirez and Cameron Diaz are similar in the...
Well, did you hear yourself when you said their names? They sounded similar.
Diaz Ramirez? Yeah, okay. Cameron Diaz is our Richard Ramirez. Okay,
yeah.
I get it. Yep, one-on-one. Okey-dokey. That's a conspiracy theory, actually.
Yeah, they're together.
Oh, they're...
She was one of the women who... wanted to marry him when he was on death row.
Oh, yeah. There was something about Mary, except for it was reversed, and she was into Richard Ramirez.
Was he killed?
He died of cancer.
Oh, come on. We didn't get to kill him?
I know. You're supposed to die in a gas chamber,
too. Do you imagine? I mean, just the worst. Because he kills people in the worst way, the worst moment you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. Just safe at your house.
Yep.
Someone comes in and just does unspeakable things to you.
And then murders you. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's one of the unspeakable things.
But I'm saying after he did other bad stuff.
No, yeah, we don't need to get it. This okay. is a nice family podcast.
I forgot.
Yeah.
He fucking rocks. Richard, not, oh my God. Oh my, no.
Wow, so he's hot and he rocks.
No,
and you're in love
no,
with
no,
Richard Ramirez.
I was talking about Cameron Diaz.
He is your Cameron Diaz.
Stop. I hate Richard Ramirez. He's fucking awful. He's a devil. But that bone structure, baby. Okay, and also all
Ramirez, he's bringing sexy bag.
Oh
yep.
My God. Oh my God. We have a lot of
she
people,
was with that guy.
We have a lot of family members of victims listen to this from mm-hmm. Richard Ramirez.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit.
This is big in the Richard Ramirez
circles. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Pentagrams.
Venn diagrams.
Pentagrams. We are off. That's great. This is a great intro. Okay, so here's one. This is a dumpster dive.
We made a good choice coming outside. It's a different vibe out here.
It's a great vibe out here.
Yeah.
It's fun. Okay, so this is, he said he doesn't want his name, but it's a dumpster diving story. He goes, hey, Brooks and Nick, or guest name here. It's Nick. You got him. You can call me, quote unquote, Kevin. This is not bad that we should have had to hide your name, but okay. He says, I have a combination dumpster diving / stealing from work story for y'all. Love it. Love stealing from work. Love dumpster diving. The Venn diagram is a perfect circle right now. At my old job at a popular pharmacy chain.
So you mean the pentagram? Yep. Keep going.
I know. I thought about it. I was like, we're moved on. At my old job at a popular pharmacy chain, we would have to dispose of out-of-date product. Food in particular had to be disposed of the week before it expired, so we would fill garbage bags with random food like Oreos, Skittles, and juices. At the end of the night, we would toss this garbage in our dumpster, and I had an idea, since I was in college at the time, to bag this food separately and put it next to the garbage.
There you go. That's how it's done.
Fuck yeah.
That's the classic stealing from work. You go, you take it out to the garbage.
But you don't even put it in the garbage. This is just
right. Of course, you put it next to the
dumpster adjacent.
Yeah.
I mean, I like your.
My friend in high school worked at GameStop. This was classic him. Every night, he would get a new game.
What?
Yeah. Just take it out with the trash. Put it on the trash. Good night, everybody. Go grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Hell yeah.
I like that a lot. After a few months, when the bag was a little light on food for me and my roommates, I would add stuff and just say it was expired. This is he's doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
He went from, you know, taking expired Oreos to now just, what do I want in Walgreens?
Yeah. Because this is what they call the Tiger King turn. You start off getting the expired goods, but you're not happy.
He just wanted to rescue a few tigers.
So you start making pizzas out of them.
Yes. He's threatening a woman on his website. My biggest haul was
he's getting a limo to his prison cell because he thinks Trump is his friend.
Oh, my God. Okay. So he goes, my biggest haul. Remember that moment in time where we're like, who's Tiger King voting for? And we wanted to know.
Yeah, we knew.
And we were upset that the murder guy, that the
that the meth addict from the middle of the country.
Yeah.
Who
paid a guy $3,000 to kill a lady.
Yeah.
Vote would maybe be Trump. So he says, my biggest haul
was probably his husband's slaves that I feel. It's the most evil part of this
his
guy.
Husband's slaves.
His straight husband's slaves.
Yeah.
Good gourd.
My biggest haul was 2 30-gallon trash bags full of food and drinks, which we threw a party with. Hey, Kevin, great job. I like that. You know, you're really
you got to throw a party with it because you got to get rid of it.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, take from the rich, give to the poor. You're the poor.
Yeah.
It's incredible. You're Robin Hood. Your name is Robin Hood.
Honestly,
lovely.
Why doesn't he start a catering business? Like for kid parties, for like high school, college parties, just like want food there.
What do you want? What, like,
just like for $100, I will bring you like just so
a
much
garbage
food.
Bag of shit.
It's in the package.
it's a real grab bag.
It's Johnsonville brats and Skittles.
Yes, every party's favorite. Incredible. Speaking of Trump, though, I did a show last night at the Improv, and I wanted to tell you
Mar-a-Lago.
Lori Kilmartin went up before me.
Yeah,
had the funniest joke. You know when
that's not surprising.
No, it's not surprising. She's the best. And also, I'm sure it's fine. Her joke was so good.
Could you imagine someone being like, how dare you talk about how I'm the funniest person?
Exactly. But so her mom died during COVID.
Yes, which she killed, by the way.
Oh.
No, I just mean like her talking about it.
Yeah.
Just like
so
seeing someone talk about that. Like the same way Solomon Giorgio with the death of his sister.
Yeah.
It was just like seeing someone talk about that and being so much smarter and funnier than you about it.
She goes, my mom died from COVID. And she voted for Trump, so it was ruled a suicide. Great. The best joke I've ever heard. I was like, turning to someone, I was like, that's the COVID joke.
Yeah.
You can't write a better COVID joke than your mom passing away
also,
and dunking on it.
What's your COVID story? You know?
It's exactly.
Like, your parents didn't die.
Yeah. I'm like, we're done. We're no more COVID jokes. She did it. She got it. She
it was hard for 2 months.
Yeah. Ugh. Incredible. Well, follow Lori Kilmartin. I asked her if she wanted to do the podcast afterwards. She said, yes. So I'm going to follow up with her on that.
Nice.
Okay.
Uh-oh,
this week,
and then she's going to listen to this to be like, let me listen to one of Brooks's. And be like, oh, he loves me. Yeah, nope.
Exactly. He loves Lori Kilmartin and Richard Ramirez. My two favorites. All right. So we've got a great
Richard
guest.
Ramirez would be like, my mom died last week. I killed her.
Right. Oh, my God. We got the best Richard Ramirez joke now. All right. Come see me and Nick in Austin, Texas at the Creek in the Cave. In July, I'll be in Des Moines the week before that, the week that Nick is at the Creek. It's going to be great. So Des Moines, come out. Austin, Texas, come out. It's going to fucking rock. We have this week, I haven't even interviewed him yet, but I know it's going to be good. Johnny LaQuasto.
Oh, incredible.
Love Johnny LaQuasto. Started comedy with him. He's the best. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it. He moved out to Tampa.
What a name.
He loves pro wrestling. We bonded over pro wrestling. And he got a job being an announcer interviewer for the WWE.
So he moved
to fucking Florida. That's where they're all, to Tampa, where they're all located. And then I'll find out what happened. But, you know,
that
whole like industry kind of went under. So I know that he's not working for him right now. But like,
because they couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
They had to do Zoom calls, fights.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll figure it out, and it's great. I'm just stoked. I can't wait to hear. He says he has a good John Cena story, so I'm excited to hear that. Cool. Anything else, Nick?
No.
Great.
No, excited.
Enjoy this episode with Johnny LaQuasto. Who doesn't want instant gratification? If you're looking for satisfaction, there's no need to wait. With Credit Karma Money, you could win cash reimbursements for debit purchases. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Okay, right now visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. Welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I got him via cross-country interview, Johnny LaQuasto.
Brooksy!
What's up, man? How are you? Where are you at? Where do you live?
Dude, first off, I don't think I've seen you in three years. I think it was New Orleans, right?
Oh my gosh, WrestleMania. What WrestleMania was that?
That would be 34, I think.
It's the only one I went to. So that's the easy fix. Dude, okay. So for listeners, a quick little run up to who Johnny LaQuasto is. Really great comedian, great friend of mine. And then got it. You were always into wrestling. And then I run into you, professional wrestling, in New Orleans. You're doing work for not a WWE company, but some other company. And you're like, oh, yo, I think wrestling might work out, pro wrestling, like all this. And I was like, okay, Quasto, love you, but okay. Cut to like 3 months later, you're like, dude, I work for WWE now. It was so dumb.
Well, the funny thing is, I forget what I was doing there. And I was doing a couple different things. And then you were there just having fun being Brooks, which is always a party in itself, as we know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, for years, the dream was, I mean, obviously I stand up too. I've been doing stand up 15 years, but like.
No, I know that. I'm just saying like you got a job in the professional wrestling industry, which is the thing we both love.
Yeah. And that's something I didn't think would happen. Like that's one of those dreams where when you're 7 years old, you're like, how does that even happen? And then even when you're 30, you're like, how does that even happen? It's one of those things. I just kept doing commentary because I loved it so much. I loved it as much as stand up, sometimes even more. And, you know, you do it enough and you meet people, they like you, and one thing leads to another. And then you get to do it. And then the pandemic happens. And here we are.
Woof. Okay, we'll get to you and me at WrestleMania 34. Okay, yep. That's the goal of the end of this interview, is you and me discussing WrestleMania 34, because that's, for me, where you found this awesome career of working for the WWE. But before there, what all happened? Johnny LaQuasto, who, by the way, we will put up that photo of you, me, and Santino. We have been friends forever. Mm-hmm. One of the funniest guys in the world.
I'm so stoked to have you on. Where, but I don't know a ton about you. Where did you grow up and what was your first job?
Not too far from Iowa. It's a place called Pennsylvania. It's
very far. It's very far.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in my heart.
Technically, nothing's too far from Iowa.
Right. And I felt like in my heart, I was always close to you and Brido, like from a emotional.
Mike Bridenstine.
Yeah. Who's also an Iowan.
Right.
Exactly. Now, I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania, a little town called Northampton, which I think now it's capping out at about 20,000 people. It's really growing.
Oh, well, I mean, that's a nice city. Did you say Easton?
Right next to Easton.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
I'm from Northampton in eastern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But ironically, it's next to a town called Easton, which is next to New Jersey.
All right. My favorite wrestler of all time is this guy, Brian Snyder, who is from Easton, Pennsylvania. Wrestled for Nebraska.
I think I know. Wait, when did he wrestle? How long ago?
He was, he wrestled D1 in like 2001. It was a long, long time ago. He rocks. Doesn't matter. I just thought you said Easton. I was like, do you know about Brian Snyder? This isn't important. It's just about Quasto. So you grew up in Hampton. What's it like? 20,000 people. What's the nearest city?
Well, first off, Brian Snyder, I think I may have heard of him. It could be because there was a Brian Snyder in my high school. I'm not sure, but it's quite possible.
It's a pretty normal name.
But Easton and Northampton were big wrestling high schools. Like, we had two of the top schools in the country. So there was that whole rivalry and shit like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Look, get it. I mean, look, you're talking to a West Delaware boy. So what's Hampton like?
Northampton is, we have our claim to fame from the movie School Ties, because if you watch the opening scene of Brendan Fraser on the bus leaving his hometown in the 50s, it zips down Main Street in Northampton and you see the Roxy movie theater, which is super old. And they made my town look really, really old for 1 week in 1992. And they filmed like 25 seconds of the movie School Ties from Northampton.
You are overestimating how many people would know the reference School Ties.
Really?
I love Brendan Fraser. I love 1992 movies. I do not know what School Ties is.
Are you shitting me? We should stop recording and you should watch the movie. Dude, Matt Damon?
I don't know what to tell you, man. School Ties is not in my like lexicon of movies I've seen. Like, if you're talking about if we're discussing Encino Man, yeah, I've got you. I know what we're talking about, but we're not. You're talking about the quote unquote fake movie called School Ties. I don't know.
This was post Encino Man. This is when Brendan Fraser had already come of age and he was starting to like, you know, headline movies. But it was Fraser. It was Matt Damon. It was the guy. I can't think of his name, but he played one of the skinheads in Higher Learning. He played like the lead skinhead.
Okay. So, and then we're going to get back into what the podcast is. But
let's just keep veering off.
Blast from the Past?
Yeah.
I feel like you're describing the movie Blast from the Past.
No, Blast from the Past was a fun romp. School Ties is not that. It is a real serious movie. Brendan Fraser essentially hides his Jewish heritage when he goes to a very prestigious high school that is kind of like the Ivy League of high schools. And it's during the 50s when it's very anti-Semitic. And Matt Damon turns out, and Brendan Fraser is like the best player on the football team. It becomes knowledge that he's Jewish. And then a lot of bad stuff starts happening. It's a really, really great movie, though. Fantastic movie. It's just, you know, sad in many points.
Sounds trash. I'm not going to watch it.
Fair enough.
So you grew up in School Ties Town, Northampton, Pennsylvania.
Word.
What's your first gig? Like, what's Quasto doing as a baby? What's baby Quasto doing?
You mean work-wise?
Are you biking around? Were you a little chunko?
Big time. I stopped riding a bike when I was like 9. I was like, nah, not for me.
What do you mean? How? Why?
I don't know. It's a weird kid. I did get chubby at 9. I got real fat at 10. I was gargantuanly fat at 11. Still really massive at 12.
Okay, hold on. Let's not throw around fat, but how chunky were you at 11? What are you talking about?
If you flip over my Little League baseball card with the stats, mm-hmm. it says I was, and this is in sixth grade, it said I weighed 155, but I know I was being kind to myself. I was actually 165.
Jeez, I mean, that's fine. Okay, if you know LaQuasto now, you're listening to this podcast, you're very in shape, you're a healthy boy. You probably weigh maybe 10 pounds more than that, and you are not
that Well, age. What's funny is I couldn't even fit into the Little League pants. I had to wear my own sweatpants. Like, if you look at our team photo, it just looks like I forgot my pants that day. And I fit into the jersey, but my God, I can't believe I didn't lose circulation around my biceps because fuck, that thing was tight.
So what? Why were you such a little chunko? Like, what was going on in Quasto's life that led to this?
Dude, the best way I can describe it is a lot of tartar sauce. You know,
I don't know. No. A lot of chicken.
I love Long John Silver's. I put tartar sauce on everything. Big sweet tooth kind of kid. And I think it kind of runs in our family. My brother was chubby, but then I just surpassed his level of, he was a manageable chubby. I was a, wow, do you have a hypothyroid?
All right, we'll move forward. But will you send me a photo of chubby Johnny and can put it in the Instagram?
Dude, I have so many, yes.
Okay, great, that sounds great. Okay. So you're a little chunko, you're a little tank, you're rocking around, walking around. Sounds like you're not doing too good at Little League.
Mm-mm.
If you're a little tank and you hit grand slams, it's fine. If you're a little tank striking out, no good.
I was the latter. I did hit one home run over the fence, and it was one of those where, sometimes I just swung really hard. And one time I hit one and it went over in the neighbor's yard. And you know, like when you hit that Little League home run, that's that slow motion Chariots of Fire moment. So like my little fat ass.
I'm really bad at that. okay. So Northampton, Chubby Quasto is coming down. Mm-hmm. What's his first job?
First job, right when I turned 16, got a job at Champs Sporting Goods.
Really? I worked at a sporting goods store. Okay. Did you dig it or what?
Oh, I was terrible at it. I lasted 4 months.
What do you mean lasted 4 months? You got fired from a Champ Sporting Goods or?
Well, I wouldn't say it was fired. They stopped putting me on the schedule. And after I called for the fourth week in a row asking for my hours, my manager finally said, yeah, John, we're not going to put you on the schedule anymore. Happy New Year.
What happened? Why? Why were you so bad? How did this go down?
Well, I don't know how your sporting goods operation was. Champs.
Not great.
Okay, fair enough. What was yours called?
Hibbett Sporting Goods.
Hibbett's? Yeah. Hibbett?
Hibbett Sporting Goods. It's a southern chain. It creeped up to Iowa, then I think it shrunk back down. I think we were like its like biggest gasp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like its biggest reach, it hit Iowa. And then after we took it down at the mall, Kennedy Mall in Dubuque, they were like, we've grown too big.
People in Iowa don't need sporting goods.
Well, people in Iowa shouldn't run sporting goods is what they realize.
So Champs, they had weird rules. The first thing you're supposed to do when a customer walks in the door is not just greet them. You're supposed to accost them. You're supposed to just bother them right away. Like, hey, what are you looking for? Can I help you? But like, kind of like the guy from Office Space, like he wants some pizza shooters, like that guy, right?
Right.
And I hated it. I was terrible at that shit. And then on top of it, the second rule was if someone was buying something, you had to upsell them to a double sale. So like the best example I can give is if they get a pair of sneakers, you got to convince them to buy a pair of extra shoelaces.
Yes, this is a nightmare. And this is so important. And this is why this podcast is important. Yep. For everybody out there who has Champ Sporting Goods store jobs, or I worked in a movie theater, were you supposed to upsell? Fuck that. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. It sucks. You're making minimum wage and they want you to push people who just spent money to spend more money. It's bullshit. How do you feel, Quasto?
Oh, I was heated about it. And here's the best part. Every single week, you're supposed to average 40% of your total sales to be double sales, right? Mine were terrible. And so of course I complained to my buddies about it. My favorite moment working at Champs is my buddies come walking in one day and they're pretending to look at shoes. And the moment I get within 5 feet of them, one of my buddies screams out, no, I don't want shoelaces. Stop bothering me. Jesus. Everyone at the store turns around and looks. It was great.
Yeah. Well, because it's bullshit. They're buying some. Don't get me started on upselling. Upselling is sucks because they send in quote unquote secret shoppers.
Oh,
remember those?
At Hibbett's. I didn't know they had secret shoppers. Wow.
They didn't have secret shoppers at Champs.
They may have. I didn't help any of them. That's for sure. If that was okay. The case.
So a secret shopper means that they come in. If you don't upsell them, you get a demerit or whatever.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So Champs, I just, attention. It turned into me asking like their cops. I was like, are you a secret shopper? And, yeah. Cause like, you have to tell me if you are. That's what I felt. I don't think.
Nice. How long did you last at Hibbett's?
A summer. But back to Champs. You're working at Champs. You're cruising 4 months. You're bad at it. You're not selling a lot. They don't put you on. Where do you go after that? And what's the plan?
Well, what happened was holiday time rolled around. So holiday time, they put more pressure on you to sell because they think people want to buy stuff. You better really up those double sales. Yep. You know, they wanted 40% or more minimum. My sales percentage of double sales during the holiday was 8%. Like I was by far the worst employee they had.
Good, though. You're still up. You're still trying. I mean, that's all I can say.
Wasn't good enough for the managers. And so they just stopped putting me on the schedule after the holiday.
Okay. So where do we go after that? What's after Champs?
Then my buddy's aunt was a manager at Chi Chi's Mexican restaurant, which
Chi Chi's.
You have them? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, they all went under due to hepatitis a little while ago.
I did not know. Go ahead, explain.
Yeah. This happened, I want to say, early 2000s. There was a hepatitis breakout. I got to look up what state it was. And it destroyed Chi Chi's financially. And they all went under. So they've been gone for about 15 years now.
That's insane. Okay. I got hey, listeners, listen next week. I'm going to have a full rundown on Chi Chi's. How long did you work at Chi Chi's?
Oh, man. I was there for the last couple of years in high school until I went to college. Yeah, no, I hung in there, man. I started off working in the kitchen. I was doing cold prep, which meant I made salsa. I made the chips and I knew how to, I learned how to make fried ice cream.
What is fried ice cream? Give us a rundown.
So Mexican fried ice cream, here's what you do. What I would do is I would take a 4 ounce, I would get a massive vat of French vanilla ice cream, one of those round gimmicks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would chop off a 4 ounce slice. I would roll up in a ball, roll it in cinnamon sugar mix, and then roll it in cracker crumb. And I would make 20 on a tray. You put that tray in the freezer. And then anytime someone ordered Mexican fried ice cream, server would take it, pick it up with a set of tongs, whatever the hell. You quick dip in the heater, in the hot fryer, and boom, you got your Mexican fried ice cream.
Sounds delicious. It doesn't sound like you had any problem. It sounds like you were incredible at it.
Well, and you know what's funny? The hepatitis breakout, 2003 in Pennsylvania, Beaver Valley.
Okay, I want to let people know that, because everyone listens audio only, this is not directly related to the great story you just told about how you're good at this.
No, I had nothing to do with the hepatitis. I was gone by
then. Yeah, but you're like, this is how it works. And it just streamlined into what felt like you did this.
Yeah. No, I made the fried ice cream. The funny thing is, as a fat kid growing up, Chi Chi's was my favorite restaurant. So every year for my birthday, I was like, I want that fried ice cream. And so then I learned how to make it in high school. And then I got sick of it after a while.
That'll happen. All right. So you're a great fried ice cream player, maker.
Mm-hmm.
Quick, let's sidebar. What do you mean to, it was in Pennsylvania. Where at was this hepatitis situation that year?
Just somewhere in Beaver Valley or Monaco, it's called. I want to say that's got to be near Penn State because Beaver Valley, I don't know.
Who cares? Doesn't matter. Yeah, all right.
Whatever. So, Hep A. It was Hep A, by the way.
Who gets hepatitis A? I've never even heard of hepatitis A.
I'm assuming a line cook. Yeah. That'd be my guess. I work with some shady ass line cooks, man. Oh my God. There were so many people that came in with their work release tags on their backpacks. It was dope. And I was this like 16-year-old pimply kid just trying to make fried ice cream. I had these hard dudes in the back of the kitchen with me, man. It was fun.
Doesn't sound like you were trying. It sounds like you made some fried ice cream and I'm proud of you. So you go through high school. You're Johnny LaQuasto. You rule. What's the plan? Where do you like? You're working at Chi Chi's.
Mm-hmm.
Chunky, but you know you can figure it out. Like, mm-hmm. What decides the next decision? Like, where do you go?
Well, what do you do when you're 17 and 18 and you leave in high school? I decided to go the physical therapy route in college. Right?
Why?
And so. My mom and dad were both nurses and I knew I didn't want to wear a suit and tie. I didn't want my main job to be centered around money. Like I had a lot of friends go into like financing and stuff. And to me, that just didn't seem like, I don't know. I didn't want to live, like all my friends that went to Penn State, just, they did finance and even more cocaine. And I'm like, good for them. It just wasn't really my thing, you know?
No, 100%. So. So where'd you go? And what happened?
I went to the University of Sciences in Philadelphia, really small Division II school, like 2,500 kids, 3,000 kids, physical therapy program, but had to find a job. Well, I'm going to stick to my restaurant knowledge, and I went to Chili's.
Oh, from Chi Chi's to Chili's. Congrats.
That's right.
Dude, I still love Chili's. I love Chili's.
Same. It's the only restaurant I've ever worked at that I will still eat at, probably because the other restaurants are no longer in existence, but Chili's still going strong.
Well, okay. What rocked about Chili's? What did you like about Chili's?
Dude, the menu was easy. Back then, the menu was like 2 pages. I bused tables. I became a server. It was one of those things where like when I was in college, I only had time to work one day a week. So I would go in and bust my ass and my manager liked me. So he would give me the best tables. What I learned at working at Chili's is, you ever see the movie Waiting with Dane Cook and
you know Ryan what? I'll be honest, because of this podcast, I was like, should I write a movie about early jobs? And I went to watch Waiting and it is really bad.
It's really bad, but it's really realistic.
Yeah. Very realistic, but very homophobic.
Yep.
Very like, it's just like so many slurs, so many, yep. I don't doubt it's realistic. Mm-hmm. America is homophobic, but yep. I watched that movie and I was like, geez Louise. Like I saw it in theaters and thought it was fine. And I watched it recently, like a week ago. And so it's crazy you brought up. All right.
Well, because every restaurant, every chain restaurant, I should say, has a character like Dane Cook's character. Every chain restaurant has a dude like Andy Milonakis who thinks he's a rapper when he's just taking the garbage out back. Every restaurant has that miserable server who's been working there for too many years who hates everything. Yeah. So like that part of it is realistic. And so that's what I learned at Chili's is you have your people that like some of the servers would get mad at me because I would get the good section. And they're like, he only works here once a week. Like what the fuck? Yeah. And it's like, well, because I just show up and I work and I don't complain and I leave. I loved it. It was great.
I freaking get it. Don't go watch Waiting if you're listening to this. It's batshit out of its mind, homophobic. But you're going there while you're getting physical therapy. When does comedy start creeping into your brain?
Starts creeping in. Well, when I was a kid at first, you know, in Living Color, I still will say if it wasn't for that show, I never would have had the balls to even try comedy in my life.
Why? But, like what sketch? Like, can you point to like a favorite?
Dude, I think it just hit me. I'm a little older than you. So I think it just hit me at the right time. Like when it first started airing, I'd never seen anything like it. You know what I mean? Like I'd watched, you know, Eddie Murphy doing stand up and I had seen some R-rated things. And in Living Color wasn't R-rated, but it was like so next level intelligent and next level funny. As a 10-year-old kid, I didn't even get most of the jokes. I just knew what I was watching was brilliant and never been seen before. Like I know Richard Pryor had a sketch show and it was, you know, inspired by that and stuff like that. But to me,
I didn't even know he had a sketch show. I mean, I love In Living Color. I just like wanted to know what sketch that stood out to you. For me, it was when Jim Carrey was trying to stand out in the back. You know, he's like, There's a sketch in Living Color where Jim Carrey is like swinging on a chandelier just to be in the back of a news.
Background guy. Yeah, yeah.
It was so incredible to me. So that's what I meant. Was there a thing like that?
You know, for me, it was actually David Alan Greer.
Well, I mean, the funniest guy in the world, that adds up. Okay. So yeah. You love In Living Color.
Anything David Alan Grier did, whether he was the main character or just, you know, helping the scene go along, everything he did was so perfect and so specific. And even as a little kid, because as a fat kid, if you don't develop a sense of humor, you're going to be miserable. So like In Living Color helped me develop my sarcasm and my sense of humor. And to this, I still say, if it wasn't for that show, dude, I never would have even wanted to do stand up.
Okay. You know? So you love In Living Color, which tracks. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a great show. But then you go to college to become a physical therapist. Like, mm-hmm. When do you start connecting that you could be a comic?
My junior year, I decided to write a movie. And I was like, well, at that point, I was like, I don't want to stay in Pennsylvania. I want to move. My brother was already in grad school in California. I was like, I want to move out west. I'm going to write this movie and I'm going to go sell it. And I'm going to be working in comedy. And that's going to happen. And so I wrote the movie. I finished it in my fourth year. Feature time length.
Out. Time out. Quick cue about this movie.
Oh, it was bad.
What was it about? Oh, and boy. What was the title?
The title was called The Mullets.
Uh-huh.
And what's ironic is only like 2 or 3 years after I wrote this script, a really bad sitcom on like the CW came out called The Mullets.
Sure. But I'm not going to give you any credit. Yeah. I'm not going to say good job. I'm not going to say.
No, it wasn't.
How long did it take you to write The Mullets? And how many, what happened? Like, what was it about?
It probably took me, I don't know, maybe almost a year. It was about a band. They were called The Mullets.
I like it more now. I like it more now. I'll be honest. I'm back on your side.
Thank you. Appreciate that. They were childhood friends and they grew up and they became a band and they were called The Mullets. And they were, you know, it's the story about a band who's trying to get on and they meet a wacky A&R who in my mind at the time I wanted Will Ferrell to play that character because Will Ferrell was almost famous at the time. Like he was on SNL and becoming super popular, but he wasn't like legend Will Ferrell yet, you know?
Yeah, no, and who would want him anymore?
Yeah. And so I had him in mind for that. And one thing leads to another. I don't even remember what happens now. They eventually have like a big show. There's a villain in the movie who's trying to ruin them. And I forget what his reason is. And he hires like kind of, it's almost like a Bondy thing. He hires like a beautiful seductress to like take the mullets down.
Sounds good. It's I like it. I want it. I'll put it out. So bottom line, you write a movie, which is, to be totally fair, like really hard to do. You did it. You're like, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to write a movie. You sat down, you wrote a movie, and it gave you the courage you needed to move to Los Angeles to pursue this.
Yeah. And I didn't start stand up until, well, actually, I started like 6 months after I moved to California. Yeah.
Okay. So you graduate college, you've written The Mullets. Mm-hmm. And what leads you, like, talk us through moving here. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you did it too, man. It's crazy.
Right. But I had a job. Like, did you have a job?
I did. I had a physical therapy gig lined up working in a school district with special needs kids.
Incredible. Talk about that. That's so important. That's what this podcast is about. Like lining up jobs to quit.
Yeah. So I got hired over the phone, which I should have been a little nervous about, but I didn't want to move out there without a job. And
yeah, I get it.
You know, the kids were awesome. Loved working with the kids. The school district was a disaster. My boss was a disaster. Mm-hmm. And I only lasted about 5 months because it was you're driving around peak traffic all over Orange County to like these different schools and everything. And then I went into another physical therapy job. Like for the most part of the past 15 years, I've had like part-time physical therapy gigs. Like I've lost count of how many times I'd work a 10-hour shift at a hospital, shower, and then run to a show or another show. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what we do.
Yeah, of course. But it led to WWE, which then mm-hmm. the pandemic fucked everything. We'll get to that. But yeah. I want to hear more about, so you moved to Los Angeles. You're a physical therapist for kids in need. Like, what is that job?
It was interesting. So mostly occupational therapists work at school district with kids because they work on like fine motor stuff, like, you know, like it's basically kids that have the global delays, everything from kids who have different.
What is global delays?
Basically, they're not at the age level functionally that they should be. Like a 7-year-old kid is only presenting as like a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, like that kind of thing.
Okay.
They're just growing slower and they're not as strong, for example.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I would work with kids from different levels of autism to kids who diagnose, you know, mental retardation. One of my favorite kids of all time, he was very bow-legged. You know, his legs were curved out around the knees, right? And he would repeat everything he heard, which is called echolalia, right? Like, I would say, you know, I won't say his real name. I'll be like, "Hi, Edgar." He'd go, "Hi, Edgar." You know, that kind of thing. He would just repeat, you know? Sweet kid, adorable. He was only 5 years old, right? He was diagnosed with autism and mental retardation, right? I worked with this kid one time. I was like, this kid is smart. And keep in mind, kids get misdiagnosed, I should say, all the time. A lot of times it's doctors not paying attention. A lot of times it's other things, right? So I'm working with this kid over a period of a couple of months, and he's also getting speech therapy. This kid keeps getting better and better, right? Unfortunately, his bow legs are still really bad. It's called genuvaris is the technical term for it. But he's doing awesome. He's following every command. He's getting stronger. He's getting more outgoing. His language is getting better. He's not just repeating words anymore. Months down the road, we find out he was obviously not mentally retarded. It's just he came from a Spanish-speaking home and didn't know any English when he got to the school. So when he was repeating words in English, he was trying to teach himself English. And none of the people in the school could figure that out until the speech therapist figured it out. And her and I were talking. I'm like, this kid he's special. He's like, he's a gifted kid. He's great. And sure enough, he was. And he ended up having, after I left the school, he ended up having a surgery on his knees, because the reason why he was bow leg, a part of it was that he was very malnourished. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have the right nutrition growing up. He came from, unfortunately, from a very low income family, you know, but I hope that kid is doing great. I mean, right now he's probably like 23, 24 years old. I hope he's doing awesome.
Dude, that fucking rocks. And that's why we're friends. You have great stories like this. That's so dope. Okay. So you are a physical therapist. You start doing comedy in Los Angeles. You're working all over. We meet, and then let's talk about how the pro wrestling starts happening. Because I meet you in 2009. I love you. You're great.
I think we met before that, dude.
I moved here in 2009, so it would have been 2009.
Oh, then it was. Okay, you're right.
I just know 2009. And you were like one of the first guys I met. And we both love pro wrestling. We both loved it. So talk, just can you, yeah, just discuss like how you, it, when I heard that you got hired at the WWE, is very few times I go, this is the best job I've ever heard anybody getting. And that was, I was like, Quasto will fucking crush this. And you will, because it's coming back, and you will. So I'm excited. So I'm going to get back to you doing it. So how did that happen? Explain.
Started stand-up in 05, and throughout all those years, I'm doing the physical therapy hustle, doing the stand-up hustle, doing shows mostly in Orange County the first, you know, handful of years. That's kind of how you and I met. Then mid-2010 rolls around, I was hosting this like social media thing. I got in on-camera hosting. I started doing that, and it kind of came naturally or whatever. And I was working on this one project with this, you know, small company. And the guy working the camera, him and I just started talking one day. And we started talking about wrestling. He's a wrestling fan. I'm a wrestling fan. That was it. A couple months down the road, I get a phone call from this guy, David Marquez. And he said, "Hey, I was talking to Jeremy. He's my number one cameraman. And he mentioned that I need to meet you." Okay. And so we met at a Starbucks in Studio City one day in 2010. And he said, "Hey, I'm starting a weekly professional wrestling television show. It's affiliated with the NWA, the oldest wrestling association in the world."
What's NWA stand for?
National Wrestling Alliance.
Okay.
So it was basically, the NWA was a collection of wrestling promotions and territories, and it was all under kind of the moniker of the NWA in a way. And it's like the oldest wrestling title in the world, stuff like that. And at the time, the show was going to be NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. And he said, "I need someone to do backstage interviews. Would you be interested?" I said, yeah. And he said, I can't promise it's going to go anywhere. I don't know. I can't promise anything besides an opportunity. I said, you got it. I never even thought I'd have a chance to work in wrestling. I didn't even know how to get in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And started the show in October 2010 was the first taping. My very first interview ever was with the champion at the time, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, who now you see on WWE television every single week. He's essentially the authority figure now. He's like the general manager, if you will. He's
who is he now?
He's basically the guy who makes the matches on SmackDown and Raw. He's bald, he's tall, he's a very strong voice.
Adam Pearce?
Yeah.
Okay. I just didn't know if they changed his name. I'm going to be honest, I have not watched pro wrestling in 4 or 5 years. Okay. Well, since that WrestleMania, I geared up, I loved it, and then I just kind of fell off. But
it's
okay.
Life. What are you going to do? Yeah.
I feel like with pro wrestling, you do flow in and out of it. You know what I mean? Like if it's coming to LA, and that's actually, I think the main part, if it's coming to LA, I go and I'll gear up for 6 weeks before, you know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm aware and I love it and I'm excited, but then you flow in and out. All right. So you work with Adam Pearce. That's your first interview. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so I just started working Champs of Wrestling Hollywood, and first couple of years I'm doing interviews, occasional in-ring interviews, ringside, stuff like that. And I think I want to say it was 2014 at one point, David Marquez calls me on a Thursday night and he said, hey, you're going to be doing commentary at the tapings on Sunday because so-and-so can't be here and so-and-so can't be here. One thing led to another. He's like, you're doing commentary.
Also, just for listeners, this show is the biggest thing in biggest wrestling. It fucking rocks is what I'm saying. Like it's the biggest wrestling show to go to in California. It's dope. It's fun. The guys who are winner, the big dudes go to the WWE pretty soon. And you're part of it.
Some of them. Yeah, for sure. And so, I go to the tapings on Sunday. I've never done color commentary or play by play in my entire life, but I'm just, you know, I'm like a prep fiend. I prepared my ass off. I got my notes ready. I kind of taught myself how to do the notes or whatever. And it went pretty good. And, I kind of fluctuated back and forth between commentary and interviews for a while. And then I started doing commentary full-time for the show, full-time meaning like every episode, you know, we would do 2 or 3 episodes at a taping, mostly color.
What does that mean? 2 to 3 episodes at a taping.
So we wouldn't film one episode every week. We would film every other week or sometimes 3 episodes in a day for 3 weeks of television.
Okay.
Yeah. It's because it's hard to do it every week, you know?
No, I totally get it. I'm just saying, explain for, yep, for me, the idiot.
And so, yeah, I started doing commentary, I'd say very consistently for the last 4 years or so. And we surpassed 400 episodes, which was super cool. And then I started working for other companies here and there when I saw you at WrestleMania 34.
Yeah, I was like, this is exactly when we run into each other. And mm-hmm. I did not know you were doing any of this. And you're like, yo, I'm doing this. And I was like, this is so fucking cool.
It was neat. Yeah, I called the CZW show that weekend and I forget what else I was doing.
I'll be honest with you, Johnny, when you were like, yo, like I'm like doing this thing, I might work with the WWE. You know, we're friends. We you know, known each other a long time. You like told me like, I think it might head towards that. I thought you were crazy. I Thanks. Literally was like, cool. Quasto's out of his mind. Quasto has lost it. And what? 1 year later, you're like, dude, I work for the WWE. I was so stoked.
It was insane. And
I was cool, so happy. You know what it's like to be so happy for a friend? That's what it was. Like, I was like, dude, he loves this. This is perfect. I was so stoked. Okay. So talk about how you got that. Sorry. I got excited thinking about it.
Man, it's surreal as hell. And so along the way, I even got to go to Pakistan to be part of the first ever live pro wrestling in Pakistan because.
Is that how you say it? That can't be how you say it.
Pakistan is the correct way to say it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'm an asshole because I've
said Pakistan. No. Hey, look, I still say Pakistan accidentally sometimes. It's fine. I don't look, they're cool. They're cool. And so a friend of mine who was the ring announcer for a show called Lucha Underground, she got booked for this trip to Pakistan, right? And they asked sort of like, who can do commentary and everything else that you would want to travel with? Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, I'll talked to Quasto. She asked me, we went in 2017. It was unbelievably cool. They did it again in December of 2018. I went back and it was the coolest thing ever. Like, we're on the national news every single night for putting on live professional wrestling. We were part of a massive celebration on the border of Pakistan and India. They do a flag ceremony every single day because, you know, historically, Pakistan, India, the governments don't get along. The militaries don't get along.
Yeah.
So every day at this border, they do a celebration where there's a bunch of people from India on one side, Pakistan on the other side. They're just cheering in the stands. There's music. There's people dancing, all types of stuff. And we got to be like the guests of honor for it. So like things like that, that I never thought I'd ever work in wrestling, let alone be able to do this, right?
Yeah, be able to be the bridge between the India-Pakistan conflict. That's fucking cool as hell.
I can't even, to say it was an honor, man. I love them. Like I texted the one guy last night. I said, hey, man, when things clear up, if you're doing something again, I'm now available. Let's go.
Don't type in India COVID. I'll give you that. Do not look that up.
I will avoid that. So that was December 2018, right? And I was at the point in my like career-wise when it came to LA. I'd been living in LA for a long time, been doing comedy for a long time. I was at a standstill comedy-wise. Like, I love stand-up, but I was just getting tired of the, like, how many times do I have to show up at a club, hope to get up to impress some 25-year-old junior agent who doesn't know shit about life or comedy? Like, I'm just done with it. You know what I mean? Like, what can I do? Like, I know I'm good enough to be at WWE, but I honestly have no clue how. I have friends there, still have no clue how. There aren't many positions.
Okay, and this is leading also to you and I going to the Brea Improv together, which is a great comedy club in California. Yeah. You tell me you're going to shoot a special. And mm-hmm. I was like, that's great. So this is about that time. You're yep. ready to shoot your decade comedy special, which I really look up to. Just being like, I need to get this out there so I can start some new stuff. That's when WWE calls.
Pretty much. I shot the special in November of 18. And it was like, my director convinced me to do it. My director and her wife loved my album. And they were like, you need to shoot a special. And I was like, no. Because
what's the album called? I forgot. I'll put a link in this description. Oh,
Johnny LaQuasto presents Johnny LaQuasto's Johnny LaQuasto.
Great. There'll be a link in this episode description. Check it out.
So they convinced me to shoot a special. And so we lead up to that, November 2018. We shoot it. It was so cool. And we're in the editing process, and Royal Rumble weekend of 2019, which for non-wrestling fans, Royal Rumble is picture like the show that's almost as popular as WrestleMania, but not quite. So it's a big weekend, right? I happen to be in Arizona. I'm doing comedy opening for Brad Williams that weekend, right? The same weekend as the Royal Rumble. A good friend of mine who works for WWE says, hey, so-and-so from WWE wants you to have his number. He wants you to reach out and grab some coffee. We tried. He didn't have time. Didn't happen. And I'm thinking nothing of it. I'm like, oh, okay. Week and a half later, he calls me. He goes, hey, there might be an opportunity open. Would you be interested? I was like, what? Yeah. Okay. He's like, all right, send me your stuff. I shit you not. 3 days earlier, I was doing commentary at a wrestling show in Baldwin Park, and my car got broken into. My computer bag got stolen with my MacBook Pro and my hard drive.
Okay. So you're like, fuck, are you fucking serious?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, good. I have to put footage together, and it's gone. So I went online. I ripped as much of my own stuff as I could off YouTube. I begged the people in Pakistan to put together a bunch of footage for me because I'd just done everything. I'd ring announce for them. I had commentary. I hosted the entire event in front of 5,000 people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
luckily
it was a real show yourself.
Almost. Yeah. And God bless them, man. They got me everything within 24 hours. Right?
Yeah, dude. Pakistan showed up.
They did. I begged them, put together a little thing, sent it over along with, you know, championship wrestling footage. And I forget what else, voiceover reel, you name it,
whatever.
And that led to another interview 2 weeks later. And this was specifically, hey, we may have an opening on the announce team. And just to let you know, we're going to look at everything. We're considering other people. So, you know, we'll be in touch. 3 weeks go by And at this point, I remember I am at a radio conference because I love radio. And I was honestly considering leaving LA and trying to transition to the radio market, which I still want to do at some point. And so I'm at this radio conference. Colin Cowherd is speaking, who's like my favorite sports host. He's one of the most famous sports hosts in the world. And I get a text saying, hey, haven't forgotten about you. It's just WrestleMania season. It's really busy. So I'm at this radio conference taking notes, right? And I'm like, oh, okay, shit. And a couple weeks later, it's mid-March. I want to say March 20th. I'm at my hospital in downtown LA, physical therapy, right? On no sleep as per usual, because in LA, it's like you got to be out late, stand up, hanging out, whatever. I'm running around seeing patients. I feel my phone go off in my pocket. And I realize it's the call I was waiting for. And I was like, because they had told me, they said, the next time you hear from us, it's either going to be a yes or a no.
Yeah. I mean, right? Yeah, I know the hey, you'll find out on this day if you're still working here call.
Exactly. And, oh, I know you do. And I answer the phone. Hey, Johnny, so-and-so. Hey, how's it going? He's like, I got a question for you. I'm like, well, I hope I have an answer. He's like, how would you like to work for WWE?
Oh, yeah. I you know what? I'm not even going to, I hate that shit. If they know, it's just like, hey, could I ask you a few questions? Just, hey, it's Johnny. You got the job. Open with you got the job. We're nervous. If you're a listener and you're at all, we're going to hire anyone. You call them. Open with you got the job. It's bullshit to make them think anything other than they didn't or they did. You're not fun. We don't like it. It's stupid. All right, yeah. Quasto, sorry.
Answer the call. Hello, don't pee yourself. You got the job.
Yeah, so, that's what we want.
No, it was great. I remember he asked me, he's like, how would you like to work? I pause and I go, is this a prank? And he started laughing. He's like, no. He's like, look, usually we would fly someone in for an audition, but between what we've already seen from you and what everyone here who knows you says about you, we feel like it's a great investment. There's no reason to fly you in. We have a lot of faith in you. We think you can do it. And I was like, dude, you have no idea. I am at my hospital right now in the middle of seeing patients. Like, how apropos was that, that I'm busting my ass as a physical therapist all these years and I get the dream call while I'm in my scrubs running around.
That's how it works, man. What the whole fucking podcast is about, is getting the call while you're in your work clothes.
No shit, man.
I got the call in my work clothes. You should get the call in your work clothes. It's really fun.
Ugh. Yeah, it's, right. No, it's...
Yeah.
Okay. Thinking about it now. Mm.
So, no, that's what I mean. Like, it's like, it's really, it feels good. I feel good in my chest about that call for you. So you go, you're there. You told me you had a John Cena story.
I do. So I started in April of 2019, right? What's funny is I started just after WrestleMania, but I had already had plans to go to WrestleMania that year. I'm not kidding. I got my contract in the mail right before I went to LAX to fly to New Jersey to go, because it was at MetLife Stadium. So I land, I do a red eye. I land, I have to run around, find a FedEx so I can like sign my contract and then go get it notarized and then FedEx it up to the company because I want to get it to them as soon as possible, right?
Oh yeah, no, 100, I totally get it, go ahead.
Yeah, and so that year at WrestleMania, I sat way up in the stands. It was cold, it was rainy, it ended after midnight, but I remember that feeling. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sitting here now. Next year, I might be backstage or I might be doing something else, you know, for the company that weekend, right? Mm-hmm. So I started, you know, just like a week and a half later, I moved to Florida and everything. And honestly, it was everything I ever could have asked for. I mean, they told me they hired me to be a utility guy because they knew I could do everything. So I did backstage interviews. I did ring announcing on live events. I did some digital stuff. And then of course I was training to do play-by-play the whole time because there's a different style depending on what company you work for. And then I got to do my first ever live broadcast November 15th of 2019, of all places, in the same arena I had been going to since high school, Wells Fargo Arena in Philly. Just so happened to be that it worked out that way.
Dude.
Yeah.
Okay. This rocks. I'm, you know, that's why I'm so excited to like COVID, you know, this stupid quarantines, like pandemics coming to an end, because we're going to get back to this shit. And you're really good at it. I remember like watching you get further and further, not further and further in a way that like you weren't anything, but it's just like, Quasto did this interview. Quasto's doing live stuff. Like, it was just like very exciting. Like, you know, seeing my friend work his way up so quickly. Yeah. Fucking rocks. It's dope. So I mean,
they have a great team, dude. Honestly, my two bosses, the one I worked with the most specifically, helped me so much, like gave me nonstop notes and had enough. He was the one that had faith in me to hire me in the first place. And just so many surreal moments. There was the broadcast in Philly. And then I remember right before the holidays that year, my boss calls me up. He's like, hey, I know you're going to be with your family for the holiday, but so-and-so can't do three nights of the holiday tour. Any chance you could do Montreal, Toronto, and LA? I'm like, you mean Staples Center? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. And so we did Montreal, December 28th, about 10,000 people, Toronto, December 29th, about 10,000 people, both sold out. Staples Center was December 30th.
So what do you mean 10,000 people? Is this like a house show for people who don't know? House shows are just for people there. And then there's live shows, which are for people watching on TV.
Exactly. These were non-televised. They were the holiday tour, which are super popular. People come out. And
I mean, I'm saying is there's a difference between you're doing 10,000 person show and I don't know how many, like, you know, 3 million people show.
Yeah, no, I was doing the ring announcing, the hosting, the whole gimmick, right? So we get up at 6 a.m. from Montreal. We fly to L.A. One reason or another, a hotel wasn't booked for me. So I was like, I don't know I have to shower and change. Like, we land at like 10 a.m. I have to be in the arena at Staples Center at like 2. I remember texting Brad Williams because he lives in the Valley. I go, dude, I'm sorry. Can I come to your house and shower and maybe take a nap and get in my suit before? He's like, yeah, of course. Him and his wife allow me to come to the house. I get ready. I get changed.
Hey,
I get to Staples Center.
You call old Brooksy Dubs, okay? Because you guys
are out here. I promise you. I will. I appreciate that. So, yeah, get to Staples Center. And it was the big leg of the SmackDown Holiday Tour. And it was nuts. It was about I was told it was about 13,000 people, which for Staples Center is very close to a sellout in a wrestling setup. Because, like, you know, there's a big ring in the center and they have to, the Titantron takes away a lot of seats, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I remember going out right before 7 o'clock to do the live event hosting stuff, welcoming people, blah, blah, blah. But getting in the ring for the very first time while the WWE branding goes off and you hear the opening music and I'm getting in the ring and the lights go up. And throughout the night, I'm looking down, and this is LA where I've lived for over a decade. I see so many people I know in the audience. Then I look over here, I see Mario Lopez having the goddamn time of his life. Like, it's just it's the weirdest thing ever. And I got to say that night couldn't have gone any better. I was nervous as shit. My brother drove down, and then he got to come back, you know, he got to hang out for a little bit. And then him and I drove back up to Santa Barbara where he lives and went to Denny's on the way. And we had a night.
Incredible. Dude, yeah. That rocks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you go as soon as you tell the John Cena story you promised.
Oh, yeah. So the pandemic hits, right? And
awful. So happy it's done. Mm-hmm. It rocks.
Well, it's getting there, hopefully. Fingers crossed. And so the company doesn't stop, though. So we start doing no arena shows from Orlando. And the show that I'm doing play-by-play on, we're doing it, no arena. And this is the lead up to WrestleMania. For people who don't know, WrestleMania always happens in very early April. Well, the pandemic hit the second week of March. WrestleMania was supposed to be in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium, 75,000 people. Well, it's not going to be now. But the company doesn't want to not have WrestleMania. It's been an institution for 35 years. So they're building up WrestleMania, right? But everything is going to happen in this performance center in Orlando. And obviously John Cena was going to be a part of it. And I was always told, hey, if you ever get a chance, you should introduce yourself. I was like, I'd love to. I just never had a chance because he's so busy. And he was there one day in the PC. And a friend of mine who was working with the company. Oh, the performance center. Sorry about that. In Orlando. He was preparing for what was going to be the Firefly Funhouse match with Bray Wyatt that year. Yeah, me too. It was so cool. And my friend texted me. He's like, hey, John's in this room over here, just chilling by himself right now, just kind of going over notes. He's not that busy if you want to go in. And I usually don't fumble my words, but boy, howdy. I don't know what the sentence was that I muttered to him when I went to shake his hand. I walk in and I know what I wanted to say was, hello, sir. My name's John Quasto. I'm a member of the announce team. I'm relatively new. I just wanted to come in and meet you. That's my plan. I said something like that. I don't know what it was exactly. I thought it was going to be a quick exchange, but he actually wanted to talk to me. He's like, no, come back. And started asking about me a little bit. And it was all just like a blur. Like I was trying to take it in. And I obviously everything I say, you could see him taking it in and actually listening and asked me about my history. Cause I think he wanted to know if I had a wrestling history. Cause the company doesn't always hire people who have a history working in wrestling. Right.
Right.
And I told him everything I did, and he knew of it because he came from the California scene. It's kind of where he got discovered in a way. And then I remember the piece of advice that always stuck with me. And like I said, I was just trying to like maintain my composure. I probably looked like Raggedy Andy with how red my cheeks were, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. And which is funny because, you know, I'm not that much younger than he is, but you know, he's the guy and
you are, you're a lot. Actually, you know what? I'm going to say you're a lot older than he is just as human physiology works. That man, sure. We are all much older than John Cena.
There you go. That's a fair point. And so I remember him
nothing
telling me
you it's everything for John Cena.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's got a 12 pack. He's in Fast and the Furious 9. Teen, which whatever, it's coming out.
He's apologizing to China. You got
he's you know what I love about that is he apologized for making a simple mistake. No one's giving him credit the fact that he speaks fluent Mandarin. Do you know how hard it is to learn fluent Mandarin?
Well, I don't think it's that hard to learn an apology if it makes you $10 million.
Sure.
I think I could learn a two minutes of syllables if they're like $2 million, 2 minutes of syllables, you got it.
You're damn right. Please watch the movie. So I remember him saying though, he said, it seems like you already exhibit this, but the more you put in to this business, whether it's small things here and there, the more you dedicate to it, the more you truly love it, the more it's going to give back to you.
Wow.
It's like, that's something that I just want to make sure that you always remember that through the tough times. And I was like, wow, cool, man. Thank you. And that's something that I always remind myself of, especially over the past year when it has been really tough at times. You know what I mean? And I think for all of us and for different reasons. And so, you find something you love, you just put everything into it. I still believe that if you love something and you do it because you love it, only good things will come out of it. If you go into something with good intentions, it may not be the golden goose, but only good things will come out of it, whether it's little or little speckles here and there. That's just how I like to believe.
Dude, hell yeah. I mean, you talking about that makes me think of how Macho Man had all his in-ring gear like made. It's like he put a lot in and he got a lot out. It's awesome. Like, and he loved it, you know, like how you love wrestling and how I love comedy, and it's dope. That's the best advice I've ever heard. You know what I mean?
It really is. It's simple, but it's something that you need to be reminded of, you know?
Hey, whatever you love, try your hardest at, and it's going to give it back. Fuck, that's dope. Okay. And you know, that's, I always like to end entry level with the perfect button, just like the one you gave us. Quasto, where can people find you? Well, you have a new special coming out.
Yeah, I have my only special coming out, man. It's pretty crazy. I haven't really officially announced it publicly because I don't know the release date yet, but I did find some cool news. So far, I know it's going to be on Roku, Tubi, and Zumo so far.
Okay, sure. But tell people what it's about, because we were going to have, and also Johnny is a goddamn hero, and he's the reason this episode, this is like the 190th episode of Entry Level. I've never missed a Monday. And it's 100% because of guys like Johnny LaQuasto. I was like, dude, I was waiting for Johnny to come into town so we could do this in person. But I was like, I was in Hawaii. I don't have an interview for this Monday. Johnny did it, and it's great. And I'm going to have you back for when your special comes out. So your special is coming out. And when it comes out, you will be on this podcast to promote it. Yeah. Other than that, what else do you have?
Just find me at Jay Quasto, J-Q-U-A-S-T-O, Quasto.com, Q-U-A-S-T-O. And yeah, that's it. All social media platforms on the same thing. What the hell were you doing in Hawaii?
Fucking living that vax life, baby.
What part of Hawaii were you in?
Hawaii. It was dope. I can't express how much fun it was to be vaccinated and go on a fun trip.
Dude, way to go.
It rocked. Get vaxxed. Go to Kauai. It rules. John, I know that you listen to this podcast all of the time and that this is your number one favorite podcast.
Nonstop.
Yeah. You're always texting and emailing how I could make it better. Even though it's mostly you can't, it's perfect. That's a lot of emails you send. So obviously, you know that we end each episode with our guests taking us out.
Mm-hmm. And
so go ahead, take us out of this episode.
This has been Entry Level, starring Brooks Wheelan, recently returned from Hawaii. He is vaxxed, waxed, he is fully jacked, and he is pumped up. He is the pride of Iowa, and if you do not visit him at Hibbett Sports this weekend, you are not going to get that brand new pair of sneakers and those sweet-ass shoelaces. 5 stars.